All right, everybody. Welcome to yet another Tech Doctor podcast. I am Robert, one of the Tech Doctors, and with me is Allison Hartley, the other one of us. How are you today?
I am well, and I'd just like to take this time to wish all of our Tech Doctor listeners, we're recording on December 24th, so Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Solstice, Happy Festivus for the rest of us.
Yeah.
I think I got all the holidays.
Good. For me as well. We appreciate you guys listening to us and all of your emails and comments, and we look forward to a big 2016, but on this podcast, we're going to review a bit of some of the exciting things that happened in 2015. Seems like kind of a good idea here at the end of the year to try to bring it all together and reflect just a bit, because honestly, when I reflect back on 2015, I feel a lot of gratitude for all that's happened, especially when it comes to Apple devices. I'm guessing you would feel much the same, huh?
Yes, it's been a huge year for Apple, and it's been a huge year for us as Apple fans.
It really has. I think I want to start, oddly enough, kind of in a backwards way, but I want to start with commenting just a little bit on Apple accessibility, because for you and I and many of the people who listen to this podcast, if it wasn't for VoiceOver accessibility, which also, of course, gives us access to refreshable Braille accessibility, but if it wasn't for that, our Apple devices, frankly, just wouldn't do us much good. And so I think, as I remember back, there were so many changes in both OS X. I'm talking about earlier versions like Mavericks and Yosemite, and in iOS 7 and 8. There were so many structural changes to the operating systems that it wasn't just accessibility that was struggling a bit, but it was everything, honestly. And everyone almost was, at least to some degree, a bit frustrated with bugs and things that weren't necessarily showstoppers, or even a lot of times things that weren't always able to be replicated, but just kind of weirdness going on. And I think in 2015, for me at least, with the releases of the new operating systems, and there have been so many of them, you know, the OS X, iOS 9, watchOS, tvOS, Apple has really upped the ante, I think, when it comes to the standards of accessibility. I experience excellent accessibility to all these new devices and operating systems. And so I give a lot of credit to Apple for that. They didn't just make the new products accessible out of the box, which is great, but they also went back and fixed a lot of the problems that we were having before this year.
I agree with you. When 2015 started and we were moving from iOS 8 to iOS 9, there were a lot of random accessibility bugs, some of which I honestly can't even remember anymore because they're thankfully fixed and so far away now. But one that really plagued me, especially in the beginning of the iOS 9 cycle, was focus issues when you were scrolling through lists. If you were flicking through a long list of items, such as a Twitter client, the focus was just awful. It would jump around. You would go back to the top of the list randomly. That was the closest bug that came to being a showstopper for me. I, at one point, because of that bug, was experimenting with Twitter clients on the dreaded Windows and was doing all kinds of things to try to read my Twitter because it just wasn't allowing me to read my timeline. And that bug has been completely fixed, really, as of 9.1. But especially now in 9.2, I just don't see any reoccurrence of that bug anymore. It just shows that sometimes, I think, as consumers, we don't always know what goes into fixing a bug because we don't know what's causing it. when Apple doesn't fix something right away, I think that there is sometimes a tendency in the larger accessibility community, especially, to be very disappointed. Oh, I'm disappointed to see that Apple hasn't fixed this bug. Oh, I'm angry to see that this bug hasn't been addressed. Clearly, Apple just doesn't care about accessibility. When really, now that the bug is finally fixed, we realize that nothing is further from the truth. Apple does still care about accessibility. They do still care about fixing bugs. But sometimes it takes infinitely longer than I think we can even begin to understand to A, track down the root cause of this bug, and then B, fix it.
Yeah, you're making good points. That focus bug strikes me as uniquely accessibility only because a sighted person uses their eyes to maintain their focus on whatever part of the screen they're focusing on. So they don't, I would assume, maybe I shouldn't, but I would assume they don't care as much about exactly where the computer's focus is. I mean, obviously they want it to be in the window that they're reading information from, but that's kind of uniquely to me something that especially has to work right with VoiceOver. And like you said, we don't know to what extent a lot of times these bugs are wrapped up in other bugs in iOS that just happen to manifest themselves in a particular way with VoiceOver. So it is a complicated process that Apple goes through to resolve these things. But I think almost anyone would have to admit that this year especially, Apple has been very prompt and timely in resolving a lot of these bugs. I mean, we've seen so many iOS updates released, point updates, for example. I mean, we're already at .2 of iOS 9, and it just came out in September.
Yeah.
So they're really moving fast, I think.
And then there's betas of 9.2.1 already circulating, so I haven't installed it yet, but I imagine that it squashes even more bugs.
Yeah, I imagine so. Excellent job, Apple, in my opinion, on keeping up with accessibility this year. And for all those people who were afraid that Apple's commitment was wavering, I just don't see it. I think it's just as solid as ever. And that's leaves me with a very good feeling here at the end of 2015.
It makes me want to spend money on the new faster Mac when it comes out in 2016.
Yeah, me too. I plan to buy a new MacBook Pro in 2016.
Me as well.
I'm excited about that. So last year was a huge year for hardware, and am I remembering right? I guess the first new hardware we saw was Apple Watch in April.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, you know, Apple Watch, as far as accessibility goes, was a home run. It was fully accessible right out of the box. We have experienced the same frustrations that others have talked about with the watch being slow, with maybe wanting more apps on the watch or things like that. But all that said, I personally love my watch. I use it every day. It's really become such a part of my routine. I have certain use cases for it that I make use of at work. Lots of things that I do with it at home, timing guitar lessons, timing some of the other activities that I do, setting alarms to remind me when a certain thing is coming up. I use the Dark Sky app to keep track of the weather on my watch. And now, just as of a day or two ago, we now have a very nice vibrating, silent way of checking the time on the watch with an app from the Netherlands called Time Buzz. with only one Z, oddly enough. But Time Buzz allows you to set your watch up in such a way that you can check the time completely silently. So it's nice to see some of these things coming along. And I don't know what your experience exactly has been with the watch. I think I know a little bit about it, but what's your overall comment on Apple Watch at this point?
Well, in terms of overall accessibility, I think that for a 1.0 release of a product, from an accessibility perspective, it's been stellar. The things that have plagued me in terms of the slowness, like you mentioned, are things that plague everybody, blindsided or otherwise. I personally, because of the interface glitches, did not find myself using the watch as much. However, I have noted improvements as software updates have been released, as watch OS updates have been released. And as we're trundling along here to 2016, I want to do some self-improvement. And some of that includes weight loss and really utilizing the technology that I have available in my life that I'm fortunate enough to have to improve my life in myriad ways. And so I want to get back into using my watch. I'm having a problem right now where I've somehow managed, it's been on the charger and somehow the watch and VoiceOver are both muted. And I don't know if there is a gesture to unmute VoiceOver because the watch has never been paired with my new phone, so I can't go in through the settings app on the watch and fix it that way. I'm starting to see the benefit now more of having this watch as more than just a convenience. I'm starting to see where it could really be a tool that will be useful to me, especially with things like Time Buzz, some other apps that I have heard about that have just come out. I think that it's going to be a bigger part of my 2016, admittedly, than it has in my 2015. But in terms of just overall accessibility, they really hit it out of the park from the very beginning, I think.
It's definitely a product that is growing and changing, and we got into it from the beginning knowing that it was going to get better and better as time goes on, and I'm sure that it will. I do wonder if, and we don't know if this will happen, but if they release another version of the watch hardware in 2016, will you buy it or will you hold off a while?
I guess that's going to depend on how vastly improved the hardware is. What are the changes? What are the things that you can do with this new hardware that you can't do with the original Apple Watch? Obviously, if it's going to run significantly faster, I probably will. When the second version of the watch comes out, whenever that ends up being, I'm potentially considering getting the sport model. I think part of the reason why I haven't worn it as often as I would have liked is because I don't dislike the stainless steel model, not by any sense of the word, but it does feel a little bit heavier on my arm than I expected it to. I don't know what I was thinking. It's stainless steel. Of course, it's going to be a bit heavier, but I'm debating going with the sport model next time around. Isn't that what you have?
Yeah, I do have the sport model and it's very light. So for that reason, I will probably go with the sport model again. I, like you'll have to wait and see what the hardware changes are. I'm not absolutely convinced that there will be new watch hardware in 2016, but there might be. We've heard rumors,
yes,
that there might be. As everyone loves Apple rumors, not me, but people love to speculate, and so we'll just have to wait and see. And I'll, like you, we'll have to see what the changes are if new hardware comes along. I'm really hoping that the bands will fit the new hardware. Surely they will not change that because I just invested in giving myself a new band for Christmas, which I've not allowed myself to open up. So I can be surprised. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, I think the watch is probably not for everyone. And to be honest, when Target dropped the price by $100 over this Christmas holiday season, I really considered giving my son an Apple Watch for Christmas, but ultimately decided, just kind of knowing him and knowing how he likes to glance at his phone really fast and keep moving. I'm just afraid that, and he's not a watch wearer, I'm just afraid that this version would be a bit aggravating for him, mostly because of the speed of it. So I decided not to do that, but it was a hard decision because I love my watch, and maybe even at this point, I'm more enthusiastic about it than you are, although I hear that changing as we move forward with the new apps and everything. Y'all, I'm going to interrupt the podcast very briefly here to tell you about an app that just appeared in the Watch App Store while we were putting this podcast together. It's an app that lets you record your voice, record audio directly onto your watch, which is exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm recording this by speaking into my watch. The app is called iReg, I, lowercase, then uppercase, R-E-G. It's a very simple recording app that allows you to record in several different qualities, three different recording qualities. I'm on the highest quality now for this recording, which creates an M4A file. You can save that file to your phone, and then you can do whatever you want with it. You can send it to Dropbox. You can email it. You can add it to a note. Do several things with it. So it's a really cool way to make a little recording onto the watch. If you wanted to record, say, a little memo or note or some reminder to yourself or something that you would want to use later on, works really great. And in fact, I guess I'm proving that you can also, in reality, record a podcast on your watch. The recording does also pick up VoiceOver if you're using VoiceOver on the watch. I'll show you that now. I'll show you the amount of time that I've spent recording. And then I'll flick over to the stop button and stop the recording, and we'll go back to the regular podcast.
2, 3. Stop recording button, compact button.
It's hard to remember the order of exactly when things came along, but we feel like the next thing that sort of came up as a bit of a surprise for everyone was the new MacBook. And this is an extremely lightweight MacBook with only one port, which is a USB-C port that's used for everything, including charging. But it's got really good battery life and doesn't need to be charged as often. But it's a real step in a different direction for Apple with a new keyboard with much less key travel, and I don't think either of us have had a chance to play with one.
No, I haven't.
I should have when I was in the Apple store last time, but I was too excited about getting one of the other products we'll get to in a minute here. But I did have a chance to talk with several people who have the MacBook, and most people are really satisfied with it. I think for me, it wouldn't quite be enough because I like having lots of different ports on my machine, and I use the machine for recording podcasts and plugging in audio devices and this and that. So I'm much more of a MacBook Pro person, but for a lot of people, I would think, especially for students who are carrying these computers back and forth to class, wow, I would have loved to have had a MacBook when I was in school.
Me too. It's definitely not the machine for me now, but I think any student would really benefit from it if they want a Mac that's light and portable and that has all-day battery life and that will allow them to do all of the things that a student mainly needs to do, which is email, web browsing, YouTube watching, paper writing, research. Oh, yes, all the YouTubes all the time. Then the MacBook might be a good solution for you. I would spec it up as high as you can personally, That's just my opinion. If you're going to buy a computer, I figure spend the extra couple $100s, or sometimes in Apple's case, several $100s, and just spec it up, because it will run optimally at that point.
Yes, it will. I think that some people have been a bit frustrated by the lack of travel on the keyboard, but the computer is so thin, there isn't much room for key travel. I think we're going to see some form of that keyboard design in the new MacBook Pros, but I don't know if it'll be exactly what's in the MacBook, because they won't be quite as thin. I believe it also has the new trackpad, which is essentially a virtual trackpad that when you click it, it doesn't actually move, but it feels like it moves because of the virtual feedback that you get. So this is definitely a, in my opinion, beginning of a style or type of computer that Apple is almost certainly going to move forward with. We're going to see a lot of the things that are in the MacBook in next year's MacBook Pros, for example. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but clearly this is an innovative product. Even if this generation isn't for everyone, it's a step forward, I think.
I agree. I'm really excited to see what the future holds for this line.
Yep. Sounds like fun. So the next thing that I remember after the introduction of the MacBook is Apple Music coming along with its 90-day free trial. I don't know what you did, but I started that free trial as soon as it became available. And I personally have really enjoyed Apple Music. I don't think I use it in the way that a lot of people do. I don't use iTunes Match, and I don't download any of Apple Music onto my device, simply because I have a large enough iPhone that I keep all of my music on my device. And when I want to stream something from Apple Music, I'm always on Wi-Fi or an LTE connection, and it streams fine. So I haven't really felt the need to turn on the cloud portion of Apple Music, which allows one to download the files. If you do download them to your device, you can play them, but they are DRM protected because they're designed to be only available as long as you have an Apple Music subscription. But it works great for me. Yesterday, I told Siri to play a Linda Ronstadt Christmas album, and we got to hear a really great album by Linda Ronstadt that I'd never heard before and I probably wouldn't buy, but it was thoroughly enjoyable to listen to. So my experience with Apple Music has been great. How about for you?
Well, I've loved Apple Music from day one. I know that some of our podcasting colleagues have had myriad issues with it, I think partially surrounding the fact that they use iTunes Match. I have iTunes Match. I don't really find that I use it a whole lot. I have turned on the music, the iCloud music library. I don't tend to download most things from Apple Music. I find that some things just kind of download randomly, but that's okay because I have a big phone. I have really enjoyed, I love just being able to think of a song or an album and tell Siri, play this. And randomly the other night at 1 o'clock in the morning, I thought of On the Turning Away by Pink Floyd. And 5 seconds later, with really no effort on my part other than talking to Siri, I was listening to it. It's just kind of revolutionizes the way I think about music and the way I listen to it. I like the For You recommendations. I like the new radio stations a lot. But really, I use Apple Music for mainly what is going around in my head at the moment, to just play something at a moment's notice, or when I think of an album, to just randomly be able to listen to it without buying it. I haven't bought an album since I got Apple Music, except for Adele's new album that wasn't available to stream. It has just really changed the way I think about music. Music has become, listening to music again has become much more of a part of my moment-to-moment life because of Apple Music, because it's just so easy and convenient.
Yeah, the same thing for me. I love that ability to just think of an album and immediately start playing it. It has changed the way that I view music in some ways, but I have to honestly admit that I was really glad that Taylor Swift spoke up about making sure that the artist got paid whatever little bit they can make from streaming music during the trial period. I think it was really great that Taylor Swift spoke up, and really great that Apple responded and said, yeah, you're right, we're not really being fair to the artist here. And that was very cool that that all worked out the way that it did. But I still do feel a little bit of a desire, a little bit of an obligation, I think, to buy an album if I really like it. Because I think the whole way artists are making money off music is totally changing because of this streaming music. I mean, you just can't make much money from record sales if people are streaming instead of buying. And so they have to figure out other ways to make their money, which is okay, I guess, because the world does change. But wow, I feel for those artists, honestly.
Well, and I agree with you there. I feel for them as well. And truly, if it was a small independent artist who perhaps didn't have the fan base or didn't have the huge multi-million dollar touring revenue coming in from their album, I would absolutely still buy it, because you're right, it's the only way they really have to make money.
Yeah, but Apple Music is just extraordinary. Just having
amazing
30 million plus songs at your fingertips. And for me, especially in iOS 9.2, Siri is just working great with Apple Music for me.
Siri has really come a long way, especially in terms of Apple Music. I've been enjoying the beta of Apple Music on my Sonos as well. It's been quite good.
Ooh, I want to talk about that.
I want to do a whole show on the Sonos at some point, because it's that incredible.
You're going to make me spend more money, aren't you?
I sure am. Well, you've done the same to me, so, you know.
I know. I know. All right. So Apple Music, sounds like from both of us, is a big thumbs up, and I'm really glad we have it. And as we're recording this podcast, the Beatles just came to Apple Music.
Yes. So. Years after I bought the box set on iTunes, but we won't dwell on that.
Yeah, well, years for you, only about a year for me. A year ago or so, I bought the box set. So I guess we've both played that game.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to happen. I didn't think they were going to...
No, I didn't think so either.
...release their stuff, but they have. So that's a good thing. Well, then we move on into September, where there was a big Apple event, where, of course, the new iPhone 6S and 6S Plus were announced, and the Apple TV was announced, and those are two huge products. Let's tackle the iPhone first. I am absolutely convinced that for me, the 6S Plus is the best iPhone I've ever had. It's very sturdy. I wouldn't want to drop it off the Empire State Building, but it's really beautiful in its design. It's a little bit heavier feeling, a little bit sturdier feeling to me than the 6 Plus was. They did change the grade of the aluminum that it's made of, and they improved the glass. I really love this phone. I can't think of anything, honestly, that I would want to complain about the hardware. How's it been for you?
It has been the best iPhone I have ever owned, and I have owned every iPhone from the 4 on up. The battery is even better than the 6 Plus. The weight of it in my hand is great. The damn thing has 9 lives. I've dropped it several times and nary a scratch. It's really a fantastic piece of machinery. I mean, there's nothing that I can't run on this thing. I can't make it sluggish if I try. So yeah. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful new iPhone. The Touch ID is lightning fast.
It is. And I believe it's got twice as much RAM
yep.
as the 6 had, and it's just beautiful. And one of the things that's happened for me, and I think it happened earlier for you than it did for me, but so many of the things that I used to do on my Mac, like email, like reading RSS feeds, I now do on my phone. And a lot of the reason for that is that the phone is so fast, you don't give up anything. It doesn't take any time for the phone to populate your IMAP mail or to download hundreds of RSS articles. It's literally just as fast as using the computer. And the voiceover bugs have been squelched to the point where it's easier, honestly, to use the touch interface to interact with mail and RSS and Twitter than it is to use the keyboard on the Mac. And that surprises me, honestly. I never thought I would get to that point. I still need my Mac for things, but the phone and watch combination has really gone a long way toward reducing how much I have to go to my Mac. I don't know if it's that way for you also or not.
It has reduced my use of the Mac so significantly that although I probably will buy the new MacBook Pro when it comes out in 2016, part of me in the back of my mind questions whether I should plunk down that kind of money, because literally all I use my Mac for at this point is recording and editing of podcasts. And that's it. I do all my browsing now on the phone. Literally everything that I used to do on the computer is done on the phone. And so I'm not sure. I just don't know. I'm still kind of figuring out what place in my life the Mac is going to ultimately end up having, because of course now there are ways in which you can plug mixers and high quality microphones directly into your phone and use something like Boss Jock Studio to make high quality recordings and edit podcasts and such. So it's going to be a journey of discovery 2016 to figure out, can I entirely replace the Mac with my phone? Am I going to be that person? I just don't know.
Yeah, when it comes to audio, Apple's going to have to do some work on Core Audio on iOS to allow one, for example, to record and Skype at the same time, which is what we do on the Mac.
Right. So I did wonder if that was possible.
It's not at this point, but I don't doubt that it will be. And that is going to make some interesting decisions, because one of the great things about the phone that's made a huge difference for me is how AgileBits has made the 1Password app totally accessible on iOS. And so that has a lot of ramifications for web browsing, because when you use 1Password on iOS and you have your information in 1Password, it's just one tap on the screen to log in to a website, one tap on the screen to have your credit card information automatically filled in, for example, one tap to access your PayPal account. And Safari is really fast on the phone. So I, for the first time ever, did most of my Christmas shopping and online ordering on the phone. And it worked really great. And I discovered, sort of parenthetically, that the way to shop if you want to buy from Apple is to do it with the Apple Store app.
Oh, yes.
On the phone, and you get a totally accessible shopping experience with a completely accessible shopping bag that you fill with all of your lovely items, and then you simply check out, use Apple Pay, and you're done. And there's nothing easier than that I've seen.
Between the Apple Store app and the Amazon app, I haven't shopped on a computer in months.
Tell me a little bit about the Amazon app. I don't use it on the phone.
It is accessible. It is not necessarily the most user-friendly app, and I think that that would be the case whether you were blind or sighted. There are little quirks and things that you have to do to make it work to the best of its ability, one of which is when you are flicking through an item page, reading the item description and such. I find that sometimes I have to navigate by heading to the area of the screen that I want to read, because otherwise VoiceOver will think that there is nothing else there beyond the basics of the item description, and it will take you back to the navigation menu. I have found that once I mastered the little quirks of the Amazon app, I'm able to use it completely independently and to do most of our shopping with it. And I would be happy in the new year to record a demo for the Tech Doctor listeners on some of the little workarounds that I personally use when using the Amazon app.
That'd be good, because we'd love to help people spend their money.
Oh, yeah. It's what we do best.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. That would be great to do an Amazon demo. So some things have really come together with hardware and software that just makes me love my phone more and more every day. It's just getting better and better. Can't wait to see what happens in 2016.
Me neither. And if you are thinking about doing something like document production on the phone, whichever app you use, a keyboard that I have really come to love is the Logitech K811 Easy Switch keyboard. I can't recommend that one highly enough. So if you're wanting to do more typing on the computer and you want to go the Bluetooth keyboard route, check out the Logitech K811.
Yeah, that is a good keyboard. I use the K760, which is a solar keyboard. I don't think Logitech makes it anymore.
I don't think they do, because I was actually looking for it. But the K811 charges via micro USB. It's got nice long battery. It's thin. I actually have one that I have here in the house and one that I keep in my purse. Mm-hmm. I'm a one percenter, I know. But it's that good that I actually went out and got two of them.
Yeah, excellent. Speaking of keyboards, Apple did sort of surprise us later on in the fall with new keyboards, new Magic trackpads, and I believe a new Magic mouse.
I think so, yeah.
But I had a chance to take a look at the new keyboard when I was in the Apple store, and I loved it. I really wanted one. I've got one of the old Apple Bluetooth keyboards, and I couldn't really justify buying a new one just because I don't use my old one that much. Like you, I carry it in my bag and pull it out when I need a keyboard. But I find that 99% of the time when I do keyboard entry on the phone, I use Braille screen input. And that works really well for me.
I like Braille screen input. I find that for me, I personally use a combination of dictation and just typing on the, I've gotten pretty fast at just typing on the touchscreen for short to medium length passages of text. And if I'm in a area where dictation is appropriate, I do use that a lot. And then for longer things, I like the Bluetooth keyboard. Braille screen input for me, and I don't know if it's just something I'm doing wrong, I have it set to lock in landscape. It doesn't always quite come out the way I want it to, and I'm doing the right dot combinations. I have both written and read Braille for 25 plus years, so I don't think it's a problem with my technique. It's just something, for some reason on my phone, I go to type a W and it only registers that I typed a J. Sometimes the calibration doesn't work. I'm finding Braille screen input to be a little bit flakier than I would like, and I don't know if it's a me thing or a problem with my screen because maybe I dropped the phone too much, or what it could possibly be, or just the fact that I get impatient and I just haven't taken the time to work with it as much as I probably should have done. I think that might be a huge part of it, actually, and possibly as part of my self-improvement efforts of 2016. Maybe that's one of the things I'll do.
Well, admittedly, it can be a little bit fussy. And if you work with it more, though, you'll probably learn how to mitigate a lot of that. I find that because it's my preferred mode of input, I've worked with it a lot. And I know once in a while, if it really starts messing up, if you just toggle voiceover off and back on, that will usually straighten it out. And I usually do the little calibration sequence before I start. And it is true, though, that if you don't either keep your fingers consistently spaced the same degree apart, or if you get started off badly, it doesn't work very well. But I think with it's like everything, with more practice, I bet you would find it more consistent. At least that's been my experience. But it may not be your thing. You know, it might be you just might prefer to type most of the time or dictate. And that's the beauty of it. We have all these choices.
So many choices. I feel like when Braille screen input becomes less finicky, which it slowly is doing, I think perhaps I'll use it more, because I can type crazy fast in Braille when I get a good head of steam going.
Yeah, it is really fast. That's for sure. So that's about all I can think of to say about the new phone. Even at this point in the game, if you're thinking about a new iPhone, in my opinion, you will not go wrong with either the 6S or the 6S Plus. I personally prefer the Plus, but not everyone wants a phone that big. But these are fabulous phones.
Yeah, the Plus, for me, is worth it because of the battery life. But you have to make whatever decision is going to make the most sense for you. So I would recommend that you go to the Apple Store, check them both out, and see which one is going to be the best fit for you.
Yep, absolutely. And there will always be a new iPhone on the horizon. So you get an iPhone when you need one or when you really want one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, may or may not make sense in your particular circumstances to wait for the next one. They come out fast, though.
They sure do.
So if you're not careful, you'll just spend your whole life waiting for the next one. don't make that mistake.
Right.
So the final thing that really has been a big deal for me in 2015 is the new fourth generation Apple TV.
Yes.
And I think we both got it shortly after it came out, and we have done a podcast on Apple TV, so we won't revisit all of that. But I'm just curious, after having spent a couple months with it, how are you liking it, or are you using it a lot, or what do you think of it now that you've had some time with it?
I love it. I still love it as my primary means of watching Netflix. And now they fixed the Hulu Plus app with VoiceOver, and so I will probably reactivate my Hulu subscription and use it for that as well. I really like watching TV shows on nice, big, lovely speakers. And we have a nice speaker system hook up to our television. And I find that the Apple TV interface provides such an effortless Netflix experience that it's by far my preferred method. I have not played too much with a lot of the other apps, simply because a lot of them I feel like, well, I could just do that on my phone. But I'm glad that there are so many Apple TV apps that are coming out. I think there were already several thousand, I've heard, that are out. I could see myself, when something like TuneIn comes out, using that on the Apple TV. Although now that we have the Sonos, technology just tends to cannibalize itself, because one of the things that I was really waiting for was TuneIn on the Apple TV, and now I don't really need it. But for Netflix alone, for the Netflix experience alone, I would recommend it. It's just amazing. that we can use the Siri remote from day one. The setup process, this was even prior to the two software updates that have come out. The setup process was effortless. It's really a fantastic machine and fast, so fast. My old Apple TV would sometimes stutter and halt and do all kinds of craziness when I was watching Netflix, and I've had no problems with this new one.
Yeah, we've been watching the new Jessica Jones series.
I have to watch that over my now wonderful vacation time.
You are going to love it.
I think so.
It is really a great series. And I'm very happy with the Apple TV. I've tried a few more of the apps. I downloaded the Twit app, which of course you can do on your phone, but it's kind of fun sometimes to watch some of the Twit tech TV shows. I've downloaded the TED app and the ABC app, which gives you a fair amount of news content of various ABC shows. And I know there's a CBS app. I'm glad to hear that about Hulu. I didn't know that one had been made accessible. That's
yeah, apparently news. That's just recent. I just saw that come across the Twitter a couple of days ago. And so I'm ready to update it and give it another go.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter that Hulu for iOS had been updated, but I didn't see anything about the Apple TV. So that I hope that's correct. And that's good news if it is, because it did not work with VoiceOver before.
At all. Like, so, at freaking all.
And that's one of the interesting things about the direction that Apple TV has gone. Of course, the interface itself is fully accessible, but it's going to be up to individual app developers to make sure that their apps are VoiceOver accessible. So we're facing kind of the same challenge that we face on the other iOS devices.
Right, but kudos to developers of the Hulu app and any other app that started out inaccessible and that they've learned about the benefits of accessibility and fixed it. We are always so grateful. And we're not mad, because we understand that sometimes you just don't know, and now you do, and thank you.
Absolutely. I could not have said that better myself. So before we leave you, there is one other product that came out that I almost forgot to mention because I don't have it. Yes, there are one or two Apple devices that I don't have, but there's been a lot of excitement about it. And that, of course, is the new iPad Pro. I think it's really great for people who need and want a bigger screen. And I suspect it's really cool with its new sound system that supposedly sounds really good, but I have not either seen it or heard it. Have you?
I have not. And I have a feeling that even if I did, I just don't see what problem it would solve in my life right now. I really don't. I'm glad, especially for low vision people, I could see it being a really awesome solution, depending on your particular visual situation. But for me, I mean, I gave my regular iPad Air to my husband, Jeremy, because he needed it for work. So, and I don't miss it. Everything I need to do in iOS, I'm doing on the phone, and that's fine. The iPad Pro, I'm interested to see, you know, where they take it, how much more they make it of a laptop hybrid, tablet hybrid. But I just, it's for me, I was excited to see it came out, because of course, anytime a new Apple product comes out, it's like, yay. Yeah. But it, and I'm sure it's beautiful and sounds lovely, but not going to rush out and buy it. Not spending the money.
No, I've had the same experience. In fact, I'm going to pass my iPad Air down to my son as part of one of the things we're going to do while he's here over Christmas. Because like you, I do everything that I was doing on the iPad Air on my phone. And especially the combination of phone and watch has just really negated my need for the iPad. And I think honestly, he can get more pleasure out of it, more use out of it than I'm getting right now. My wife, Vicky, loves her iPad Air. She watches a lot of Netflix on it. I don't know whether she would be a candidate for the iPad Pro. She thinks it would be too big for her, but we haven't seen it. When she sees it and realizes, wow, I could watch movies on this size screen, she might fall in love with it. I don't know.
It does sound pretty huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds pretty huge, and it weighs the same as the original iPad 1, but that weight is very differently distributed because the screen's so big.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But it's an exciting product, and a lot of people have been excited about the iPad Pencil that you can get with it, because apparently it's great for writing and drawing on the screen. And
so I've heard, yeah.
There's also a keyboard that you can get that connects magnetically, so you don't have to hassle with Bluetooth to get the keyboard working. So I think we'll see what happens with the whole iPad line in 2016. I know the iPad Mini 4 was also released, which is an essentially an iPad Air, but in the mini size or the mini form factor. So if you want a smaller iPad, I would certainly recommend taking a look at the Mini 4 because it's a very powerful one. We haven't talked about it really, and we don't need to say a whole lot, but on the Mac side, I'm really happy with El Capitan. I think it is very stable now, and in its second update from when it was released, I wouldn't hesitate to put El Capitan on any machine that will run it, which is most of the Macs, just about anything after 2008. And it's working great for me. I had some initial Wi-Fi issues at work with the WPA2 Enterprise network, but those have all been resolved, and I'm just loving El Cap. It's working great for me.
I've had great experiences with it now, especially since the second update. It's nice and stable. It's always been super fast.
Yeah. I think this year, Apple really threw their entire product line, spent a lot of time on getting rid of bugs and making the systems work smoother and faster. And I think that's really paid off for them. It's built a good foundation for 2016.
Absolutely agree.
That's about it for Apple and 2015. Any other comments you have about it all?
All I can say is that I'm really looking forward to Apple in 2016.
Yeah. I would say kudos to Tim Cook for all of the efforts that he's made in maintaining security as a priority and helping people understand that you can't give law enforcement a back door into encrypted information without also giving the bad guys a back door. I think we're going to see a lot more social consciousness from Apple. It's just, it's so cool to see a big company like that stepping out there and making statements that are clearly intended to try to be more humane, more helpful to people, more helpful to the environment. And they're not making money off those things. I just really love that.
Right. We love you, Tim.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you all for staying with us this year and for listening to this end of the year episode. We'll be back in 2016 with a whole lot more. But until that time, this is Robert, One Tech Doctor, saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley, the Other Tech Doctor, saying bye, everyone.